everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. As always, we begin our program with the latest on health and healing. Today, we're going to talk about how choline, a member of the B complex, can help you if you're frail and you have high blood pressure, how onions are good to improve blood sugar and lower your cholesterol, how emotional well-being may be directly linked with a woman's gut health. And what if you're one of those fast food consumers? Well, that's not good. It can increase anxiety and depression. And musical expertise makes older adults better listeners by keeping their brain young. Napping longer than 30 minutes is linked to high risk of obesity and high blood pressure. That's what we're going to talk about. We begin with a study from Albert Einstein College of Medicine. And it's about choline, C-H-O-L-I-N-E. I always take choline with inositol. I think choline and inositol should go together. If you get yourself a good B-complex, you'll have both of those in there along with folic acid, B1, B2, B6, B12. All right, you need those, B3. This study was reported in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology, and it showed if you're frail, and we have millions of Americans who are frail, and if your cognitive performance is not good, and if you're a man or a woman and you have high blood pressure, then consume choline because it will make a difference. And that's what this study did. They took a form of choline that made a huge difference, just 1,200 milligrams of what is called alpha GPC. And they matched that with placebos in a control study. So if you want to improve cognition, good. If you want to help if you're frail, good. And if you want to help keep your brain really solid, that's also good. And the alpha GPC functions at the endothelial cells. That's the cell that lines your blood vessels. The endothelial dysfunction contributes to hypertension. Now, why is that important? Because throughout our life, and I just had a conversation with someone yesterday about this, someone I'm working with. They thought, well, good, Gary, I'm over my high blood pressure and I've lost all this weight that contributed to it, so I'm good to go. I said, no, you're not. You're only over the symptoms of what can happen when you have high blood pressure and are obese. But you have at least another 2 years of diligent, focused, and disciplined work in order to keep the damage done to your blood vessel, the endothelium that I just mentioned. Because when you have high blood pressure, that means that your heart, which is only about the size of your fist, it can't grow. And yet you're putting all this weight and there's blood that has to get to that fat. So what happens is the heart has to pound harder and harder and harder. And that means your resting pulse, when I'm just sitting here, my pulse is resting. And it's probably around 49. That's because I have an athletic heart, because I've been an athlete my entire life. But let's just say if I were an average sedentary person, I'm sitting all day, I'm sitting at a desk, I'm watching television, I'm watching computer screens, and I'm gaining weight. That means that my heart has to go harder in their pumping, and my resting pulse rate goes up and up and up and up. And this person's resting pulse rate was 105. And contributing to even more problems along the way, the person developed tachycardia. AFib, tachycardia, these are irregular heartbeats. And what I've found in my own research, in my own clinical experience, is that a person's emotional state can immediately cause a regular heartbeat because of what are known as the stress fight or flight hormones. These are the hormones that your body secretes to help you fight or flee. And they're hardwired into all of us. Every animal, every human has them. Now, they're supposed to last for about a minute and a half to 2 minutes, meaning you have strength. You're suddenly at 3 o'clock in the morning, you have better hearing, better vision. Your muscles are ready to go when you hear something is out of the usual. But it doesn't last unless you're stressed. When you're stressed, suddenly your cortisol goes up. Epinephrine, norepinephrine, catecholamines, adrenaline, blood sugar, they all go up. That's not good. That's terrible. That's like putting in a five-alarm fire. You can't sustain that. And yet, many people have maladapted to the environment they're in, the people they're around. And you ask someone, all the time this person doesn't speak with you like you're a human being. They yell at you. Well, I know. I get used to it. I just kind of block it out. No, they don't block it out. They maladapt to a negative situation. They're feeling the stress in here, but for whatever reason, they're afraid to express their own independence, saying, you don't speak with me disrespectfully. I won't allow that. You can say whatever you want, but only I know me. Ah, now that keeps my blood pressure down, and it keeps me from boiling over, because if you don't resolve something, you have an unrequited outcome, it's going to eat away at you. Your brain's going to be thinking about it over and over and over again. So what's going to happen is your blood pressure is going to come up. You're going to have all these electrical charges going to your heart because your heart doesn't know what to do. When you have your blood pressure go up and your stress hormones go up, the heart is expected to beat faster. But you're sitting there. You're not exercising. That's how you get tachycardia. That's how you can develop AFib. So that's why de-stressing and acupuncture are the two best things you can do for AFib. You can overcome it. That and magnesium and some other nutrients. In any case, you've done damage to your arteries. Let's just say for a period in life, you were lonely, you were stressed, you were functional, but you were still depressed. So you're not eating right. You're eating too much of the wrong foods. It's causing damage inside the arteries. So now one day you're in a better relationship, you're in a better place, you feel better about life. That's good. But the damage is still there. And I have never in my entire career met someone who was overweight, who was healthy. And the one place you never look is in those blood vessels. The carotid artery that feeds blood up to the brain. That's one of the easiest to get clogged because it's one of the shortest. And when it gets clogged, you can have a stroke. And suddenly it's, boom, what happened? Well, you might have been eating all right, maybe been exercising, but you had not undone the damage. I love looking at old cars, antique cars, from the 1940s and 50s. And I especially like frame-off restorations where they literally strip the car down of everything and then redo it. And now you have this beautiful, shiny, perfect vehicle. And a lot of people do it as a hobby. They take it into the so-called man cave. I've asked guys. I've gone to car auctions when I could afford it. Can't afford any of that now. They're all crazy prices, too high, not worth it. Remember this. This is just a little add-on to your thoughts today. Always look at something with two perspectives. First, assuming you need it instead of wanting it. Because if you want something, you can also say, but I don't need it. I'll pass on it. Like I love going window shopping over in South Beach on Lincoln Road, one of the most beautiful streets in America, if not the most beautiful street in America. There's no traffic along there, and you have all these, you have theater, a comedy club, you have an art house, you have and the best art, the best fashions I've seen, and palm trees and waterfalls. It's just exquisite. If you can ever go, two places to go, they're diametrically opposite, but both have that sense of charm. The French Quarter in New Orleans and Lincoln Road in Miami. But one of the things that I noticed, one of the things I really enjoy was window shopping, where you go up and you see something, you go in a store and you see all these wonderful things, and I appreciate them, but I don't buy them because I don't need them. That stops the impulsivity to spend money that you may have in the moment, but you're not going to like it in the future, and you may not have it in the future, and then what do? You're going to be angry and depressed because you can't buy what you want. So always ask, do I really need that? And if you don't buy it, because sooner or later it's just going to become clutter. But there is a value to something, and there's a cost of something. Make sure you're not overspending on the cost when it doesn't have the value. So I don't care what it is. If it's not of value to me, I don't care what the cost is. I'm not going to buy it. And I'm certainly not going to spend more for something than what its value is. And yet today, people just buy everything, and especially professional people, and especially for their kids who are spoiled, not all of them, but many of them. And I talk with people, and I ask people, what do you see the value of something, and why would you spend that much for it? Because we're seeing that now all over Manhattan, people paying very high prices for rent and for buying things. And we're in a bubble. Well, if we're in a bubble, why buy? You don't buy in a bubble. You let that bubble descend down to a normal price. Then you buy something if you need it. Anyhow, what happens is that when we've done something we shouldn't have done, it increases our blood pressure. We're under stress. Stress is always the blood pressure going to come with that. And if you're overweight and you don't like being overweight, you increase your blood pressure. So what happens if one day you have an epiphany and you decide, no more junk food, no more sitting around, no more making excuses, no more blaming everyone for my woes. And we have a whole culture now. I mean, an entire culture, a whole generation that wants to blame everyone for everything that's gone wrong in their life, taking no responsibility. Of course, there's no good outcome to that unless you stay around people who accept your blaming and your story. All they have to do is tell their story of woe. There's a whole lot of difference that happens when you decide, let me go back and clean up the mess that I've made. You start by detoxifying, cleansing, juicing, green juices, vitamin C, quercetin, the B complex, magnesium, calcium, a healthy plant-based diet, exercise, stress management. That is what you do to clean up your arteries and veins and rebuild your epithelium. Pomegranate concentrate every day. Nitric oxide-rich foods like beets do the same thing. Then you've cleaned up the past. If you go forward from this day and you don't clean up the past, sooner or later, that artery that was damaged when you were doing the wrong things is going to come back, and a piece is going to break off, and you're going to have a clot. So when I told this person yesterday, you got another 2 years. The fact you've lost this weight is great. The fact you're over your high blood pressure is especially good. But those are only symptoms. You've got to overcome the dark side of your nature and get in there and continue it. You know, almost everyone stops when their symptoms are relieved. I no longer had that back pain. Why don't you find out what caused it? Maybe it's your posture. Maybe it's on your elbows. If you're watching me now, this is not how you should be looking into the monitor. You know, leaning your chin, that's very bad. It can cause curvature of the spine, all kinds of problems in the discs, the vertebrae. You know, sit upright, as I'm doing now, talking with you. So just want to share that information with you. So make sure you have choline, inositol, good B complex, and then detoxify to clean up your arteries, so you're no longer suffering from hypertension. Now, from Delta State University in Nigeria, onion extract improves blood sugar and cholesterol. It's that simple. Nothing more than that. Just make sure you're having an onion a day. You can have it ideally raw, a sweet onion. And red onions are the most powerful in cleansing and healing. They have antiviral, antibacteria, effects, anti-candida. They're really terrific. So onions in your salad, onions. I make a baked potato, and I'll cut it up inside, and I cook my potatoes a little longer over lower temperature. And then I'll put in olive oil and dice up some red raw onion, and then squirt it with lemon juice and lime juice, and then put pepper in it. I don't have to put salt in it. So an onion a day keeps a heart attack away. And this article was published by the Endocrine Society. It's a superstar. The more onions you have, the healthier cholesterol, the lower your blood sugar. And that's important. Didn't take a lot, about 400 to 600 milligrams, and that's not a lot of onion. And this was published in the Journal of Medicinal Food. All right? And by the way, Onions have also been shown to really help with your gut. So that's also significant. According to the world's healthiest food site, colorectal cancer, esophageal cancer, ovarian cancer are the cancer types for which the risk of reducing can be done through diet. And onions are one of the ways you can reduce that. Have onions every day. Now, from Brigham and Women's Hospital comes a study about your emotional well-being. Why is that important? Because it's directly linked to a woman's gut health. Specific species of bacteria were present with higher abundance in women who reported being happier, more hopeful, and having better emotional management skills. This is a new study from Brigham and Women's Hospital and the Harvard T.H. Chang School of Public Health. Good news, happy people have less disease. Just remember, your gut contains trillions of microorganisms collectively known as the gut microbiome. And so the food you put in will create a good microbiome, but now it's showing your emotions also help with that. So better emotions, happier, less anger, less intensity, and it can make a big difference. By the way, there are more than 200 women from the mind-body study, a sub-study of the Nurses' Health Study. It's been going on for a long time. And so just stay in a happy place for as long as you can. All right? It can make a big difference. Another study, and this one is from the Zhejiang University in China, frequently eating fried foods is linked to anxiety and depression. Now that's interesting because a lot of the Chinese food is deep fried at very high temperatures. Now they don't fry it as long as we do in the United States. They don't have the deep fryers. You put the French fries in another food and deep fry it. They generally use a wok and they're stirring it, but it's at a high temperature. And there's a lot of fried food, way too much. One of the things we shouldn't be doing with our diet, eating a high amount of fried food, because frequently fried food consumption is linked to anxiety and depression, according to Zhejiang University in China. A team of food scientists in China has found a possible link between frequent fried food consumption, which most Americans are eating, French fries, donuts, right? A lot of other foods, fried chicken. Those are all deep fried, terrible for you. And by the way, you can get the same mouthfeel, the same crunch, if you use a food dehydrator at about 115 degrees. It takes longer, but hey, I've made a organic gluten-free crust for a pizza that I was showing people how to make a traditional junk food into a healthy food. It was still raw. Technically, the enzymes were still there, the antioxidants were still there. And then I made a tomato base, and I showed them how to make a tomato base by taking onions, like Roma onions, sticking them in boiling water for just a minute, take them out, peeling off the skin, and then gently I puree it, and then I gently put it into a skillet at a very low temperature with the herbs like oregano for that traditional pizza taste, and dill, and made a sauce, made onions and garlic in the sauce, and then I took mushrooms, and I put mushrooms around it, and I put the whole thing, and also I put peppers, yellow and red and green peppers, and I put chili seasoning on it, some cayenne, black pepper, put it in a dehydrator, and then took it out, and they could not tell it was not a regular. Oh, and I put a vegan cheese in there made from coconut. So they thought, this is a real pizza. Tastes like it, mouthfeel, aftertaste, smell. No, every single item in there was a healthy item. So you can make a healthy dish. You just have to be patient and not race it. But in any case, we're eating too many fried foods. And that's what this study showed. And that can create anxiety and depression. And that can lead to all kinds of problems. And finally, from the Chinese Academy of Sciences, musical experience, meaning playing an instrument, if you're an older adult, makes you a better listener by keeping your brain young, because when you're playing an instrument, everything is attuned to the ear and the vibration, and you never lose that. So as we have an aging world population at an unprecedented rate, we're prematurely aging. In the United States, New York City, get this, in the last 3 years, according to the latest scientific study, the average New Yorker aged by 5 years. You took 5 years off your life expectancy. Wow. If the male life expectancy was 77 and now you're at 72, that's not good. And aging can lead to various types of cognitive decline, posing a serious burden to families and society. Therefore, it's crucial to develop effective interventions to promote healthy aging. And one promising approach is musical training. Even if you get older, and this was published in Science Advances. So, something to think about. And that's the latest on health and healing. And we're going to take a break and come right back at you. Please stay with us. I mean, literally, start all over as if the absolute beliefs you have are true and real and universal, when they may not be. Because if our capacity to create positive solutions were directly related to our flexibility, openness to change, to surrender old information, even information that at one time in our life may have worked for us, but today doesn't. And what if we've gone on a spectrum from tolerance and patience and understanding and cooperation to intolerance, impatience, and vilification? We've gone on the hedonic scale from simple pleasures, family, friends, a nice meal, things we share together, to one of excessive ability to do whatever we want, because who's stopping us? It's my life. I'll do what I want with it. Okay, have you thought about the consequences? Rarely do we get to that question. As a result, yesterday when I was working on this coming Sunday's webinar, it's starting at 1 o'clock, and I don't know how long it's going to be. My last webinar was 10 and a half hours. This will not be that long. I'm going to try to keep it succinct, but I'm taking on a big topic, how to get off the grid. But then it occurred to me when I went for a walk yesterday to just get new thoughts, because I want to share things that are new and vibrant and vital and positive. I don't want people thinking, well, they got to be one of these survivalists out there and go live somewhere in the Alaskan outback. That's not the case. Or they're going to be, one of these people that has 16,000 cans of each food. That's not the case. Then I realized, let's stop for a moment. How likely is the average person going to want to change almost anything in their life? And the answer is, most will not. In my own experience, only about 5% of the people actually change, even when their life is at risk. Now, they're happy if I help them take away the symptoms and give them back their health, but then they go right back to the old ways, thinking they're safe until everything is accumulated again. And then they think, well, okay. The trouble is, not all the time will people be there to help you from your own excesses or your lack of interest and your overwhelming sense of hubris. So then I ask this question. I'm going to ask you to call in later in the show and give me your answer, please. What is the likely outcome of a society that nobody is willing to apologize, no one's willing to admit they've made errors? In all of COVID, it was nothing but the biggest fraud in world history. More people died because of it, estimated somewhere between 10 and 20 million, when you account all the people who were denied medical treatment for cancer, diabetes, dementia, and they died because of that. You have not heard a single person anywhere in the command chain apologize. They want amnesty. That was an article floated, not by accident, in New Yorker magazine, saying, yeah, let's... lessons learned, let's go forward. Well, what lessons? You haven't acknowledged you've learned anything. You've not acknowledged, and we didn't acknowledge anything in Vietnam, in Libya, in Syria. We haven't acknowledged anything ever. To the contrary, today I'm going to play a clip where we now have absolute confirmation that two of the Saudi Arabian hijackers were on the payroll of the CIA. Maybe that's why Obama and others and Bush did not want those 18 crucial pages and 1,600 more, or 20 pages, to be released. So they lied to us. They were complicit. And if I have time, I'll get to that. Almost every single thing we've been promised has not occurred. Prosperity, deghettoization hasn't occurred. Now we have a new candidate, Robert Kennedy, and I sent Robert a note. And I don't tell people who to vote for, but I simply suggested this. And you might want to also, if you believe it's reasonable. He's going to split the Democratic ticket. The younger generation are going to go to him. The older generation are going to go to the corporate Democrats, Hillary Clinton, Obama, etc. The establishment, the deep state, because that's all they are. And let no one pretend they're not. The media is going to go against him, all of it. Corporate America is going to go against Bobby Kennedy, all of it. And the outcome is likely that they will never allow him to take office. It's just too much they're going to lose, power and control. And as a result, he'll probably be assassinated. I wish it weren't so, but that's the likely outcome. It happened to his brother. And you'd have to be a complete blithering idiot to believe that Sirhan did that alone. It did not happen. Or that that Oswald killed Kennedy alone. Didn't happen. Why are they still keeping all these documents from the Warren Commission secret after all these years? That's the Biden administration. So I've made these some suggestions. Announce to the public, I'm only making a suggestion, that when you are officially in the race, you're going to, well, not just officially, he's officially in, but when you're giving a platform, make the number one thing on your agenda to pardon Julian Assange, pardon Edward Snowden, pardon every single whistleblower for the last 30 years, because not one has been pardoned. Every single one has been tortured. Chelsea Manning has been, they tried to assassinate one. They wanted these people killed, and they haven't proven that Julian Assange is guilty of anything. What all these people have in common? They expose the crimes of the government and its agencies. So listen to what I'm saying. And even if you are a corporate liberal, I realize this is going to be more difficult to understand than pulling your teeth out without Novocaine. How is it legitimate that you punish people with life in prison for exposing a crime against humanity, but the perpetrators of the crime remain rewarded and protected? Now, it's that simple, Occam's razor. Don't confuse this. And these, mainly almost all these, were liberals. But that's what they do to any liberal that goes against them. Just ask Chris Hedges, ask Max Blumenthal, Aaron Monte, etc. So first you pardon all these people. That would be a big, big situation. In fact, they should be given national hero medals. Then you push for universal health care. So everyone, including a whole division of alternative and complementary medicine. And you put all the prices of pharmaceutical drugs at just a 200% markup above their cost. Right now, many of the drugs you're buying are 5,000 to 100,000% increase above their 30-day generic cost. Reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. Take all money out of election cycles. Do some things that are truly progressive and that help everyone. De-ghettoize a city. Take one city. You could take Gary, Indiana, probably the most dangerous city in American history. Take it. 70% of the population are gone. 13,000 vacant buildings. It was prosperous in the 1940s and 50s, and it had more murders than any other city, even more than Chicago. But now everyone's gone. Or Camden, New Jersey. Compton, California. There's no shortage, Newark, of cities that are completely ghettoized. And who's the most victimized individuals? The people who have to live there. So say that you're going to put money there and stop the money from the military-industrial complex. Stop the money from the pharmaceutical industry. Stop the nonsense of this and bring your Justice Department to look at the truth behind COVID, its origins, and those who are responsible. You do that, then you have a chance of getting in there. And this should be aware, the deep state has no intention of allowing you to have power. So think about that. All right? What you do is up to you. In any case, I'm thinking the problem is not just the top five asset managers in America, BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street, Berkshire Hathaway, and Fidelity. It's not Wall Street, which they control. It's not the media, which they control. It's not corporate America, which they control all of it, except for Twitter. What if the problem were we, the people, where we have stood by and allowed all this to happen over the last 50 years, 30 million jobs more or less to be outsourced, and people had good quality of life, standard of living, only one parent had to work, the other could stay home, take care of the family and the household, and everything was taken away that was meaningful. 90% of unions were destroyed. So what if we look to say, how did that happen without us being complicit? Well, when you use their credit cards, when you buy their clothes and you buy their food and you shop in Whole Foods and you go on the internet, then you're the problem with them. Why can't we see that? Why can't we see when only a few thousand people attend one of the most important anti-war rallies that the American public doesn't care? Global warming doesn't care. The attacks against children doesn't care. The adulteration of our food supply, the adulteration of our educational system, the capturing of our educational system, the capturing of our financial systems, the need to consolidate all power to make us nothing more than a consumer wearing a chip under their 100% control. Then that's on you, friend, not them. I'd like your thoughts. 888-874-4888. Now, I may not have time to get to any of the clips, which are very important, and tomorrow's clip also. I have a special put together for this week, but not on Friday, for Harry Belafonte, who just passed. I interviewed him a long time ago when I wrote Black Hollywood, the History of the African-American Experience in Film, back in 1968-69. And I'll share some really interesting insights about him in his own words. But right now, I want to share a commentary. And by the way, here's a number that you all should have to listen to the archives, because we've had an enormous increase in people going to our archives. 631-359-9463. 631-359-9463. So coming back to what I was saying yesterday, and I wrote this last night, overnight. That's why my voice is a little sore or hoarse. But I realized that just talking about the best places to live, how to make earn an income wherever you're at, how to know the zoning where you're at so you're not in the wrong zoning, how to be where it's environmentally safe, but also politically safe, which states still allow you freedom of choice and freedom of expression. What if you're a family? What if you're an older person with little income? What if you have no income? What if you're an artist struggling? What if you're okay? You're fine. All these things I'm going to get into in great depth, but we've got to deal with this issue of what good does it do to make changes if you're not the person making the changes within yourself to overcome your dark side. That's going to be something I'm going to focus on this coming Sunday. Anyhow, right at this moment, and we're full. So for those of you who signed up, good for you, because you're going to get a whole lot of information that can help you with the next stage of your life. And in any case, here's what I wrote. I want you to think about this. You may find value in it, and you may not. This is entitled How America Became Morally Bankrupt. Because from the outside, everything can look normal. But it's on the inside that it's not. There are thousands upon thousands of gated communities of which millions of Americans live. I talk with a lot of those people when I can, and they worked hard for their income, small businesses and individuals, school teachers, and now they're living in beautiful communities and with tennis and everything you could ever imagine. And up to this point, that's been pretty good. That's been really great. But what happens when the 401k and your pension, where you're getting most of your money, you're not living there on Social Security, that I can assure you, it's too expensive. What happens when the economy crashes and no one in your portfolio management told you how to get out of that, where to put your money, and now you can't afford even the common fees and maintenance fees to live where you're at? And that could impact tens of millions of people that we thought were safe. Unless you're very rich, you're not safe. For those of us who have been activists in the media and the public arena, whether as broadcasters, journalists, or community organizers, we have always believed that taking the initiative to increase public awareness about the disinformation, the faults and failures in our society and the nation would engender constructive change. Let's have a conversation about what's wrong and how we can correct it. Not going to happen anywhere. Unless we already solve those who are in charge, like the teachers' union head and others, say, you know something, I was wrong to close the schools. I was wrong to mandate vaccines, and it hurt a lot of people, killed people. No. No one anywhere in any institution, foundation, think tank, governmental agency, the private sector, no one is going to apologize for anything. So the battle lines have been drawn, and this is the disgrace. We have de-evolved, not evolved. However, repeatedly, every single effort to break Americans free from their comfort addiction have been futile exercises. I haven't been able to do it. I've counseled tens of thousands of people, and probably 5% have actually used that freedom from disease and stress to regroup, repurpose, and go forward. They lapse back. February's Washington, D.C. rally against the U.S.-NATO proxy war against Russia, for example, which is perhaps the most important military crisis leading towards an exchange of nuclear missiles since the Cuban Missile Crisis, gathered a dismal several thousand protesters, yet they had some outstanding speakers. Our complacency has become an endemic disorder. Even the neocon saber-rattling towards self-annihilation, the Sean Hannitys, the Mark Levins, is too much of an inconvenience to be bothered with. Increasingly, over the years, little has changed to reverse the acceleration of our entire culture's decline. Deep reflection and introspection consistently raise an essential question. What went wrong? For example, after promoting the benefits of adopting a plant-based diet, for over half a century, for the individuals and for the world and for climate, I now question whether even 5% of the population has embraced a vegetarian philosophy and is committed to following it. Everyone likes to hear about change, providing they're not the ones doing it. This is kind of this self-righteous sense of, well, of course I'm going to do it in time. It's just not as time. I'm going to spend time with my daughter and my son to help them in the important transitions of their life and try to be there as a third rail parent, meaning I don't want them doing things that could hurt themselves or society. So if it takes a little confrontation of ideologies, hey, I'm not here to be your friend. I'm not there as a mother to go out to your sleepovers, these mothers do today. No, I'm here to tell you there's a consequence to your acting out. You can yell and scream and think I'm stupid and run up and slam the door and wish I were dead, and then 15 minutes later come down and ask me, you know, for $20 to go to the mall to buy something you didn't need, as if there was no consequence to using your words and weaponizing, because all is always forgiven, and among the very rich and the very powerful, there's no such thing as a bad child. They're perfect. They're wonderful. They float on air. They don't even have to go to the bathroom. Everything just metabolizes in them. They're ethereal. Oh, okay. If that's how you see it, fine. The U.S. is the most morbidly obese and overweight nation per capita in the developed world. Our life expectancy declined, and many children born today will not outlive their parents. We are a nation with widespread inequality and buried in colossal debt at every level of society. Even the professional class, who are highly educated, find themselves in the precarious situation of an unannounced recession, runaway hyperinflation, and multiple market uncertainties. When the economy grew, the new emerging elite, the doctors, lawyers, professors, more advanced, educated, endowed school teachers, they thought, okay, I worked hard. I deserve what I want. Do you need it? That's not important. I deserve it. I want it. and I want it now. But you're going to overpay for it. Oh, I can afford it. I've got credit. I've got, you know, I've got everything under control. Unfortunately, now nobody has anything under control. Runaway hyperinflation is at hand. When the economy was jumping, everybody was on mad spending sprees because they believed it was necessary to maintain their unrealistic standard of living, not quality of life. They didn't have time for anything that was important except their career, making money. And now, everything they didn't pay attention to is now dysfunctional. After the pandemic and Biden's blundering sanctions against Russia, backfiring at home and throughout Europe, millions in the professional class are unable to service their debt. I know that for a fact. Because one of my, I wouldn't say close friends, but a professional friend, is one of New York's top money managers. And he tells me about how all the people, every one of his clients, no matter how much money they make, they want to sell stuff. But now they're having, they bought stuff stupidly, like jewelry, and at hyper retail, and they get, you know, maybe 10 cents on the dollar when they go to sell it. Because they didn't pay attention. They wanted it now. They got it. And now it's worth nothing. But it's not just the upper middle class and moderately wealthy who struggle to maintain financial effectiveness. The entire government, every federal, state, and city government, is just bloated like a metastasized cancer. Elon Musk, who has done some remarkable things, but is, in my opinion, an unremarkably unintelligent person. Everyone kind of gloats at someone, but he does not have a philosophical approach. He has a pragmatist approach, and those who have the power to create debt and through debt create asset are not the brightest amongst us. But he did one thing I support him for, and I'm good for him for doing it. He bought Twitter. He didn't want to. He tried to get out of it. Couldn't. Bad investment financially. He's probably down $20 billion in that investment, but he can afford it. When you have over $200 billion, what's $20 billion? But he fired 80% of the staff. And everything worked better. Well, what do you want to bet if we fired 80% of all the people working in every state, local, and federal, and got rid of all these councils and had common law councils, that everything would be better and we could reduce our debt by at least 30%? What if we stopped giving all the money to foreign countries? What if we stop giving all the money to the military-industrial complex and subsidizing corporations and banks? When they fail, we bail them out. When you fail, you're not. The White House dumped billions into fighting COVID and over $115 billion in a pointless, completely nonsensical losing war in Ukraine. Yet none of these government expenditures have benefited either the country or you. As a nation, we're economically, politically, and morally bankrupt, my opinion. Nor is anything crucial and necessary being done to reverse global warming trends and protect the environment. The Trump administration, as supercilious as they were, as stupid as they were, as mind-numbingly inefficient as they were, as corrupt as they were, especially run by an imbecile, well, they signed cruel bills to destroy their remaining ecological fragility that we all depend upon. In fact, four of the world's most populated and at the same time polluting nations, Brazil, China, India, and the United States, have inexplicitly witnessed an increase in greenhouse gas emissions during pandemic lockdowns. So they say we got to get it down, and it's up 2.3%, 2.6%. It just keeps going up. Why? Because you, including the people in this audience, not all of you, but many of you, probably the majority, you keep buying stuff that you don't actually need. Okay, well, I don't want to give up anything. I like what I have. Well, first of all, we can all see the obvious hoarder. You know, they've got so much stuff in a room, you can't walk through it. But what about the emotional hoarder? What about the person that can't get rid of the past, can't forgive, can't move on? Why should I? Gary, I was, and then fill in the blanks. And everything that's ever happened in your poor little life is pathetic as it may be, was someone else's fault, right? How quick people blame everyone for everything. And then they wonder, why do I keep sinking into this cesspool that I'm in? Someone put me here, not me. Yeah, you did. So then we wake up one day and we realize that nor is anything crucial necessary that to help reverse anything that we're doing wrong. Okay. Marx's 19th century warning about infinite capitalist growth goes unheeded. Grow the economy in the name of progress by depleting whatever natural resources are available in order to prevent the gross domestic product from falling. So the gross domestic product is all we care about. And who benefits from that? Wall Street and industrialized America and Silicon Valley. You don't. Do you know that there's 100 million Americans right now who've chosen not to go back to work or can't find a job? 100 million. And yet we claim that we have 3.5% unemployment. No, we've got 27% unemployment. We can't be honest about anything. Everyone in your life at some point lies to you. And the government can only lie to you. As a result, for decades, the warnings of many conscientious and environmentalists, economists, scientists, have become louder. The planet has entered positive feedback loops, meaning tipping points, that cannot be slow to reverse. So politically correct speeches to feed hope and secure false promises do not affect climate tipping points, as the loss of polar ice and glaciers and the rising sea level and the worsening of storms occur. Every wise environmental activist and educator who has repeatedly forewarned that we must modify our lives and embrace a more austere and spiritual perspective has been categorically ignored or mocked. And now in some ideological circles, a recent meme gaining popularity is that global warming is a conspiracy theory. It is not. Rather than fund efforts that are in critical demand for the survival, well-being, and sustainability of future generations, we're doing nothing. When I say nothing, I mean nothing. It's just one giant vacuum of special interests and cronies. We gave you a lot of money to get elected. How about coming over here to our solar? Solar is not going to save you. Wind is not going to save you. What could is not being funded at all. Geothermal and wave power and bladeless wind. We're not doing that because there's no money in it. So we fund things that take more minerals out of the earth, like the stupidity, the vileness of electric vehicles. You have to be a certain kind of stupid to buy one, to use one, and think that you're helping the environment. You're actually contributing. And I've shown you the science repeatedly. I wrote a book on it, Clear, Cleaner, Safer, Greener, Blueprint for a New Environment. Another book, Saving the Planet One Bite at a Time. Multiple documentaries. But that doesn't seem to matter because I'm asking people to make real change, to make some sacrifices. Nobody wants to do that. So, how much of the earth do you destroy? How much CO2 do you create? How many people do you enslave, especially in the Congo, with millions of people working to get your cobalt, Elon Musk? And how many people are working to sew your Nike shoes and shorts in China, LeBron James, Tiger Woods, and everyone else, like thousands of athletes? And yet these are the very people who go out in virtue shame. These are the people who, okay, they're good. They're good at throwing a ball through a hoop. Well, I know some dogs that can throw a ball through a hoop, but that means that I can respect them for throwing a ball through a hoop and the skill to get it there. I do not need any input from anyone from a sports of what it means to the rest of the planet and what we should do and not do and what we should buy and not buy. But buy my Fruit of Loom underwear because I'm Michael Jordan. No, Michael, I'm not going to buy anything associated with you. In fact, I've stopped watching all sports because of how utterly vile and corrupt and narcissistic the players are, and it's lost its integrity. And I'm a nationally ranked and world champion athlete. Just set a new state record here, only two away from having the all-time record in state track and field and race walking championship. And yet, as a real athlete who believes in humility and competing against yourself and respecting those who are in the same contest as you, Because you know what you had to do to get there. You also know what they had to do to get there. So we just don't see that the way we should today. After all, we're not revamping our weapons budgets to downsize. Barack Obama, remember him? Hope and change. And I play basketball. Do you, Barack? Yeah. Didn't you increase by $1 trillion+ our nuclear weapons so we could kill more people, even though we had enough arsenals right here to kill every man, woman, and child on the earth over 1,000 times over? Didn't have anything to do with, you know, your special favors that came in. The passage of another huge bailout for corrupt private corporations and banks. A Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to a president who spoke about hope and change but was directly involved in escalating America's wars overseas and overthrowing legitimate elected governments. Then this was followed with a president who was functionally illiterate. He was half of an idiot savant. And I'll let you guess which half he was embracing, which half he couldn't. And another struggling with senility. But what is especially sad is that the American citizenry willingly participates in and contributes to this charade. As a society, we have crossed the Rubicon into a marsh of irrational hostility and negative emotions. We have been balkanized into primordial reptilian tribes. At this moment, both sides of the left-right political divide scream about their victimhood while actively participating in society's destruction. And yet there are no massive mobilized protests against the most destructive element in our culture, as if they don't even exist. Renewable energy, access to healthy foods, banned toxic chemicals in everyday household products that are otherwise forbidden in other countries. The institutionalizations of cancel culture and government-sanctioned censorship. A new digital universe that will entrap every citizen in a carefully monitored surveillance state. The new smart cities. Well, that sounds great. No, it is not. Because you have to be chipped to live in one. On tomorrow's program, I'm going to show you three different clips of how many of these cities exist right now and how one group of citizens on their own got up and said no, and they won. And what happens if you don't stand up, then the day comes when you can't stand up. A justice system today that indentures the poor, 50 million Americans living in abject poverty, and a thoroughly corrupt medical system. None of these seem important enough to warrant millions to march. In fact, thousands? How about hundreds? You couldn't get 10 doctors out on the street or nurses to march against anything. Do you remember in Albany? Do you remember years ago when they were going to mandate and a law that every single person working in a hospital had to have 4 mercury-containing vaccines for the H1N1 virus? And we showed you the H1N1 was not a pandemic, not an epidemic. It was bad science. We marched up there. I led about 12 to 1,300 people. Do you know that not one medical doctor and not one nurse showed up? We fought their battle. We demanded hearings. We had the hearings and we killed their bill. That set them back. Do you think we got a single thank you from all the doctors that otherwise would have neurological damage because they'd have to take those 4 vaccines? And we showed in a microscope that I gave a DVD to every member of the Congress up there, or the legislature. 1 part per million of mercury, you see it in a microscope, you see it immediately go and destroy a neuron. Now imagine you had 100 microns, 100 the MCGs. You'd be destroying people's brains. Think a single person had the decency to say, hey, you fought a battle for us that we didn't even know existed, or if we did, we didn't care about. Thank you. No, not a thank you. That's a medical establishment that is supposed to show compassion and time and effort. Forget about it. How many of those cowards, and I'm calling them cowards, I'm calling our entire scientific and our entire medical community cowards, because I didn't see you once standing beside the brave doctors who didn't know each other. They started with 10, now there are thousands of them. Now there are tens of thousands of scientists who are saying we got it all wrong and are pushing back, and thank goodness for them. But you, doctor, are not one of them, and shame on you. So, do you care about anything else outside of how you and your spouse spend your money? where you put your kid in a private school you can brag about, your newest third, fourth home, your cars. No, that's the world we live in. Otherwise, you'd see some doctors and hospitals and nurses treating people for free. Good luck with that. Even humanity's complete survival is of no consequence to the vast majority of Americans. Most mysterious, none of these crises are hidden from you. They're publicly known. However, most Americans have become so desensitized, so disconnected from perceiving reality, that they are incapable of realizing how government policies and spending adversely impacts every nick and cranny in their lives. So despite the fact that iatrogenesis, medical error, and prescription drug error kills far more people than SARS coronavirus, or that elections are purchased by the highest bidder, nothing will change. Bush and Obama removed habeas corpus, our constitutional right to have access to a fair trial. And yet nobody except Chris Hedges and small group, who went down to protest and were arrested for it, nobody seemed to notice or care. Or we might consider Congress's push for central bank digital currency or medical digital passports or social credit system in the Democrats' recent Restrict Act. You have to be a special type of corrupt to pass a Restrict Act. But all of the Democrats passed it. How vile are all of you? And that was just in March, which would give the government broad sweeping powers to ban or block communication technologies they deem a risk, including VPN app downloads that otherwise protect personal mobile and computers from being spied upon. And yet the average American is clueless, not because they're dumb, but because they choose not to be smart about these new forms of authoritarian vigilance violating their fundamental human rights and freedoms. Despite the changes, despite the decades I've spent educating people about how to live a healthier and happier life, few will even take the initiative to rebel against their own unhealthy habits and behaviors. They refuse to acknowledge their dark side. Instead of running away from crisis, we're doing everything to the contrary to magnify the problems. So if the environmental and social crisis continues to spiral out of control, understand it is because America is only exceptionally pathetic. The nation has quenched its illusions and stupor far too long on Aldous Huxley's Soma, take the drug, go to La La Land. Now its intoxicating effects are giving rise to an explosion of hatred, rage, and self-serving narcissism in the streets and classrooms, boardrooms, and in all of the different bureaucracies run by technocratic sociopaths. In the sitcoms, stage, and congressional chambers, we must cease believing that the bureaucrats and technocrats in Washington, Silicon Valley, and Wall Street will ever save us. They won't. They don't care about you. You're immaterial. The elite can afford to wall themselves away in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and or other multi-million dollar yachts. But for the remainder of us, we live in a Mad Max world. Did you see about, and I'm going to talk about this tomorrow, about a whole Walmart was completely destroyed. Everything was stolen except for the fruit and vegetables. That should tell you a lot. But a woman came in, a mother with her child, and she couldn't find any food, couldn't find the baby food. And she says, what do you think is going to happen? What's going to happen is they're going to close this, and where were we supposed to go for our necessities? Because all the other big box stores have closed because of vandalism. And this was had nothing to do with Walmart. This is the savagery of the street. And this woman, to her credit, said, I will not steal anything because I don't steal. But she had a message for her community. You'll hear that tomorrow. So just remember that our negligence and ignorance and hubris have brought this emergency upon us. In conclusion, yes, there were better times in American history when the nation was relatively united because there was greater opportunities to satisfy the population's fundamental universal needs, food, water, shelter, affordable health, education, and a decent livelihood. Each has gradually been eroded away, and the pace of their decline is accelerating at warp speed. Despite the Korean and Vietnam Wars, the post-World War II years and the mid-1970s now seem like a golden age of the American empire. It certainly was for free speech and the safety for people to courageously step out of their comfort zones to express themselves and protest. But that has now been shut down. Every movement has been infiltrated by provocateurs and sabotaged. Who said nothing in the world is more dangerous than a sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity? It was Martin Luther King, who today would be attacked and ridiculed. I'm surprised they haven't taken down his statue down in Atlanta, because he would be challenging the identity politics, the woke, and critical race theory, as would others. It is our deep ignorance about not knowing ourselves and failing to appreciate our intrinsic interconnection with each other and the environment that perpetuates the suffering around us. This includes our attachments to whatever accomplishments and failures we experience in our lives, which lead either to superiority complexes or apathy and fatalistic depression. Nevertheless, even if there is only 5% of the population that is truly awake, and I believe there is 5 to 7%, maybe even as high as 10%, free of the cult of woke culture and conscientiously aware about the causes and effects of the current crisis and catastrophes, that still represents about 20 to 25 million people. That itself is sufficient to wage a conscious revolution of thought, bring about constructive transformation at the spiritual level. The oligarchy of neoliberal capitalism now governing the country will not change by itself. It will require you to get off their grid. I repeat, you're part of the problem, whether you deny it or not. As long as you're buying their product, associated with their institutions, and you go into their stores, you're the problem. The oligarchy of neoliberal capitalism now governing the country will not acknowledge its own deficiencies. It will not surrender any of its highly radicalized and impersonal forces to format it to change from within. It can't. Each of us has within ourselves the capacity to make substantial changes. It requires the courage to break free from the shackles of both blind conservative nationalism and the liberal globalist promises of Big Brother. Our true enemies are irrational dogmatic beliefs and faux liberal values, which equally keep us enslaved to a system that only serves its own interest and dehumanizes us to collateral damage to the system's failings. All hegemonic world powers ultimately collapse. The U.S. is in rapid decline now, and the powers of authority and their multi-industrial backers are dragging the citizenry to ever lower depths. John F. Kennedy gave a dire warning to those who are addicted to their self-indulgence in a faux comfort divorced from their responsibility to preserve higher values. In a 1956 speech at the University of Notre Dame, he stated, quote, "The hottest places in hell are reserved for those who in times of great moral crisis maintain their neutrality." Although President Kennedy probably read this phrase by Catholic Archbishop John Knoll, who spoke these words a decade earlier, it is believed to have originated in Dante's Inferno. It describes the fate of those who refuse to take a stand in the conflict between good and evil. The punishment is the torment of, quote, "a swarm of insects, flies, and wasps and bees," because like the stinging disorder of a swarming hive, so too is the tyrannical chaos brought about by the neutral smugness in times of urgent need to restore social apathy. "When dictatorship is a fact," wrote French author Victor Hugo, "revolution becomes a right." Sadly, we're in those times, but there are no longer enough listeners to make a difference until you decide to stop being inactive, staying in your comfort zone, and get up and do the right thing. Not violence, but take back your right by getting off their grid. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day, and now directly over to Utrecht.